I'm about to read from Scripture, and this is, excuse me, I'm going to clear my throat and drink a little water. I'm about to read from Scripture. This is actually Scripture that our minister has been talking about in recent weeks. We were covering the Psalms through the winter and the spring, and in the summer we were looking at the Beatitudes. This is from Matthew 5, 1 through 12. Now when he saw the crowds, he went up on the mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger, Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." That was Matthew 1 through 12, and this is the Little Saigon Report. If you don't know this, if you're not aware of this, if it's never come up in conversation from my podcast, you know, I'm a Christian, I believe in God. And with respect to the Beatitudes, one of the messages of our minister is that these are not proscriptions of how you should live or descriptions of how you should live. They are not, you know, you should be meek. You should do this, you should do that. They are, in fact, a description in many ways of what God loves and how God loves and how infinite God's love is. If you were to ask this, for example, let's ask a simple question, and this is sort of a Christianity litmus test. If I said, I have a king and I have a pauper, and if you don't know what a pauper is, I'll just say a poor person. I have a king, a ruler, and I have a poor person. Which one of these people does Jesus Christ love more? I have a ruler on one side of a country. I'm not going to tell you if this ruler is good or bad because, frankly, for purposes of this conversation, it's irrelevant. Powerful and rich, lots of lands, lots of things that people desire in the physical world. And then I have a poor person who has nothing, a homeless person living in the streets. Which person does the Lord in heaven love more? The poor person or the ruler of a country? And the trick answer or the trick question or the truth of this is, in my opinion, Jesus Christ loves them both equally. Now, does Jesus Christ like it when rulers become rulers and rule countries and set themselves up as God? No, probably not. Just as Jesus Christ wouldn't like it if you were poor and then used that as an excuse to rob from people, to steal their property. You know, it's complicated. But the fact is, the Beatitudes are very much about God being there for us and telling us that God is there. That no matter our situation, if we are mourning a loved one, God is there. If we have been beaten down by society, God is there. If we are willing to stand up for Jesus Christ in a world where, frankly, Christians are called stupid and made fun of all the time, and in a few, I don't think we're far away from what I would call, and again, you're all going to say I'm crazy, but I'm just being honest, folks. I think we're months, at the most, years away from the attempt at a world religion, an attempt to take all of the religions and mix them together under the fucking Pope and come up with a world religion. And if you think that that's a good sign, if you think that that's progression or evolution, then frankly, I do think you need to seek more wisdom. You need to seek discernment. I don't even care if you're a believer. You could be an atheist, but if you actually think a one world religion, especially if you're an atheist, is a good idea, please, please, please spend some time meditating on that question. You don't have to convert to Christianity. I'm just asking you to meditate on that one question. Would it be good to have one world religion? Because God gave us free will, and the one thing you find from the Bible is a great deal of variety. There were many cultures in the ancient world. There were many religions, many of them. And if you're a Christian, you have to call them false gods. But there were many false gods in the ancient world. God did not prevent human beings from creating graven images and stuff. In fact, here's the thing. God behaved in that sort of type A way when God was trying to save the Hebrews. Like most of the stuff he did that was really, really brutal. And I've talked about Korah's rebellion, you know, but again, if you don't understand that Moses and the Hebrews in the desert for 40 years, not enough food, water, or anything, gonna drive people crazy. And God would probably get disappointed on many occasions. Anyways, I didn't want to go off on a tangent there, but when I read the Beatitudes, I don't read something that's telling me you have to be meek to be loved. It's more like, if I feel beaten down by reality, if I feel as if my existence is either unworthy or inherently unhappy, if I desire peace and I'm willing to stand up for peace, if you are willing to do the same, if you're in need of his love, he will be there. In many ways, the Beatitudes are not that simple. But that is in many ways, I guess you could say, the box for me with the Beatitudes is that God is there for me. When I am mourning, God is there. When I am sad, God is there. When I am willing to rebuke my enemies if they tell lies, God is there. When I am seeking forgiveness, God is there. When I fuck up and end up in a bad place where I am broken down, God is there. And if I am meek in the face of a very brutal world, God is there. I don't want to say more because, folks, I'm still an early, I guess you could call me a late arrival Christian, or, you know, late to the show and early on the know. I'm still learning to understand the Bible. I am a Christian. I do believe in God. And there's no asterisk there. If you ask me, do I believe in the God Squad, which means all religions are true? No. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not that person. I'm not the person who's going to tell you that all religions are the same. They're not. Okay? They don't all say the same thing. You can't, you know, there's a lot of bullshit about where Christianity comes from. But Christianity, you know, comes from God, ultimately. And no, not all these gods are the same. Now, does that mean that I have a right to judge these people? No. Does that mean I have a right to say they are condemned to hell? No, that's God's place, not mine, thankfully. But if you're asking me to say that I should water down my views because other people believe things that are basically not Christian, no, I'm not going to do that. Frankly speaking, I do the best I can in a rather evil and fallen world to keep my mouth shut, but I will tell you something, there are times when my tolerance is pushed to the limit. And that's as much as I want to say. But anyways, I wanted to talk about the Beatitudes a little bit because that's been a main topic in church the last few weeks. And I don't know, I still meditate on those questions. Am I a meek person? I don't know. Would a meek person have a podcast? I think I'm probably a proud person. Probably too proud for my own fucking good, to be blunt. Probably proud to the point of self-destruction. That almost happened last winter. I was too proud to ask a sibling for food. if you can imagine such a situation where you're hungry and you're too proud to ask a sibling for food, that's a level of pride, a pride that can kill a person. I'm going to tell you guys something, and this is going to be tough to hear. These are not easy times for a lot of people. I know that people in Seattle, in magical Willy Wonka land, and other places want to pretend everything's fine. Everything is not fine. And if you go outside the borders of this country, and you can go outside the actual tourist zones and your little place you're visiting, go beyond the Potemkin villages, you're going to find in a lot of other countries things are even worse. But you have to get beyond the Potemkin facade. And a lot of people, when they go on vacation, they stay behind the Potemkin facade. They do not want to see the real truth. And listen, I don't blame them. Vacation's about reducing stress. Why the fuck would you want to go to a country and see its truth, its ugliness? It's not like people really choose to go to Little Saigon when they visit Seattle. I'm not saying it couldn't change, but it would take the whole neighborhood changing. And like most neighborhoods in this country, we don't talk to each other. We don't know each other. We're little enclaves connected through the internet. We should be connected through handshakes and hugs and smiles. Instead, we're connected through a lot of technological bullshit. And you're going to tell me, oh, Dan, don't you work in technology? Yes, I do. And frankly, I think technology is amazing as long as I'm using it and it is not using me. But anyways, I don't know if I am living the life that Jesus Christ wants me to live. I ask that question a lot. I know that Christ is happier I'm not an atheist, because at least I'm not telling people or giving people rationalizations for why they shouldn't believe. That is probably something that makes the Lord in heaven happy. But do I think I'm doing it all? Listen, folks, I drink too much beer. You know, as good as I think marijuana is for me as far as my psychology, I should do a lot less, and I should do more other things. I should be out walking more. I should try to keep attempting to meet people. Just because I have a failure trying to meet people doesn't mean I should give up. I should try to build some community around me before I die. It's hard. It's not as if the way we construct society now, it's that easy to get to know people in a real sense. It isn't. And if you knock on someone's door, it's like you're some kind of freak. And then imagine, and I'm going to drink a little bit of water here. Imagine you're the 50-year-old dude who is divorced and was a one-trick pony and only ever loved one woman and basically had friends that were kind of connected to her, but never really had friends, you know, other than one or two people for any long period of time. You're the scary dude. You're the scary dude. Imagine you're at the stage of life where you're the scary dude, and you might not actually be scary. You might just be a little broken like most people, but imagine you're at the stage of existence. You're 50 years old, and now you're the scary fucking dude down the fucking hallway. I don't know if I'm living the life that Christ wants me to live, but I can tell you that I choose not to live the life the devil wants me to live. The devil would love it if I would go for the power corporate trip. The devil would have preferred I'd become a lawyer, which means even when I was an atheist, God was looking out for me. The devil would love it if I would try to come up with some new algorithm to build some new weapon to kill people. The devil would love it if I actually participated in complex theoretical work to improve the nature of warfare. The devil would love that. The devil would love it if I voted Democrat, Republican, and told people that the crocodile is wonderful, and look at the fucking check you just got. You got a rebate check, and please ignore the pillars of smoke in the distance. The devil would love that. So even if I'm not living the life that Christ wants me to live every day, I am certain of one thing, folks, and this is why I think the metro bus drivers are trying to kill me, because many of them are basically demons, the bus drivers. I may not be living the perfect Christian life, but I know that I'm not living the life the devil wants me to live. The devil does not like what I'm doing. The devil would prefer if I told you the crocodile is wonderful it isn't. The devil would prefer if I told you bullshit about me. You know, like everyone does, to give you the happy, shiny fucking version. No, I'm going to give you the brutal fucking truth. And yeah, maybe the devil likes it when I swear, but I sure as shit knows that he doesn't like what I'm swearing about. You know. So I don't know. I'm still working on it. Anyways, we got topics. Other than the Lord in heaven, and he deserves his time, we have topics. I'm going boating today. And I didn't say voting. That wasn't, you know, a V for Victor. That was a B for Bravo. I'm going boating today. A friend of mine, technically a relative, just bought a boat. And we're going to go out and maybe hang out in the water. And I'm kind of looking forward to it. And this sort of dovetails off of that whole issue of normality. Like, what does it mean to accept the fact that if you've had some bad times, things get a little normal? What does that do for you? It's funny, and I guess I'm on a Christian thread here, but one of the big themes of the Old Testament is something called the cycle of apostasy. And I've spoken about this many times. It basically goes like this. The chosen people ask for help. God helps them. They start doing well. They forget about God. They adopt other gods. Their lives turn to hell. They ask for God's help again. It's called the cycle of apostasy. And it happens more than once with the Jews. I'm not, you know, this isn't about anti-Semitism. This is about the good book. This is about the Jewish text too. There is a story of the chosen people, a common theme, a common cycle of the chosen people, the Jewish people, loving God, God helping them, and then they basically just, you know, don't give God the time of day and then find another God. And then their lives turn to crap and they wonder why. Anyways, when you get to normality in your life, maybe you pray less. Like, I was praying a lot. I'm not gonna lie to you. In January and February of this last year, when I came really close to another one of my moments of destruction, and I've had a few of them, a few tipping points like that, I was praying every day, multiple times a day. I was praying on my knees sometimes. And that's the thing, folks. I know that the kind of self-destruction a person in America suffers is not as bad as other places. And the kind of self-destruction that a ginger, white, male, middle-aged computer programmer suffers is not the same as a lot of worse places in America. Believe me, I've seen some crappy places in this country that make little Saigon look like a fucking paradise. If you think that this country is not falling apart, it's because you're staring at your phone too fucking much, man. But when times get better, when we have the food and the water, when we have the shelter, when we have the extra things, when we have the money to buy some brand new digital recorder, when times are better, when you can talk about, we're going to go on a boat ride today, it can be easy to ignore what Christ has taught us. It can be really easy to ignore the lessons of God. It can also be easy to ignore what's happening around us. Here's a little fact you need to understand. By the time my dad was my sibling's age, the sibling that bought the boat today, he had bought, with cash, I think, 3 or 4 boats. In the 1970s, my dad, as a logger, I think was making well over $90,000 a year. I think way over that. And that was 6 figures in the 1970s, folks. If you were making $100,000 or $200,000 a year in the 1970s, you were doing really, really well. And that's how well he was doing as a logger. And then the entire thing fell apart. And yeah, we can talk about the spotted owl, and we can talk about regulations, and we can talk about the fact that once you create a regulatory environment, small businesses go out of business. They do, because only corporations can afford a team of 100 lawyers, you stupid fuck. We can talk about that crap, but the bottom line is my dad's world turned upside down. But he listen, by the time he was my sibling's age, he had bought his homes with cash, he had bought boats with cash, he had very little debt. That all changed, but that's another story. And here's my sister, whose kids are grown up and they're essentially out of the house almost. And she's getting this boat, and this boat is about, I don't know, half the size, a third the size probably, of the boat that my parents had. And it's not new. And I'm not beating it up. I think it's really cool that my sibling can do this. I'm really excited to go boating today. But I'm trying to just remind you that normality is great, but don't be fooled by what they fucking tell you about how everything's better today than it was 40 years ago. Don't be fooled by that bullshit. The Federal Reserve would love to convince you that they have managed the US dollar to success. I'm going to tell you a little bit of the truth, I believe. I think the Federal Reserve has managed the US dollar to our destruction. Okay, in the last 100 years, I think the dollar has lost pretty much almost all of its real value, about 99%, you know, or more. But it certainly doesn't buy what it did 100 years ago. So like I said, okay, normality is great. Things feeling normal. I want to go on a boat ride. I think this is really cool. But I have to keep myself grounded or else I'll go crazy. Anyways, I got to go to the next topic. That's enough of that one. God, I got serious there. Kind of religious. Oh, this is the next one's a good one. This next one's a really good one because I feel like we'll clear the air. Some of you folks who listen to my podcast might think I'm a bit preachy. And I don't know, maybe I am. Maybe I am a bit preachy. But here's the thing, I'm not. And some of you may think that, well, Dan, you're just talking big talk, and I wish you would, you know, not talk down to us and maybe explain things differently. Here's the deal, folks, and this is what you really need to listen to, because I don't want to spend a lot of time on this topic, but it's so fucking important. I would rather talk up to you than down to you. Now, you need to think about what I just said. I could feed you simpleton shit. I could use very simple language. I could spend all day talking about my farts. And I can guarantee you that that conversation, that monologue, would be far less stressful and easier to understand than most of the shit I talk about. That's a fair statement. That would literally be talking down to you, because I'd basically be talking at a level where I disdain you, where I think you're stupid, where I think you don't have brains. If you really think about it, folks, for those of you who think I need to, like, maybe tone it down and simplify things more, if you really deconstruct this, I'm actually talking up to you. I'm actually paying you a compliment. I'm assuming that you have the requisite constructed neurons in your brain, your requisite connectome, to use the latest parlance of the freakish world of those techno freaks who want to plug us into the great web. Listen, if I am talking on this podcast, I'm making the assumption that you have intelligence. I'm not assuming you're stupid. I know I say things like, you know, you must be stupid if you believe this. And listen, folks, I'm a radical supporter of free speech. If you're offended sometimes, that means it's working. But yeah, I'm not talking down to you. I am talking up to you. Now that also does not mean you have to agree with me. But you know what? If it does mean every once in a while you have to research something before you figure out you disagree with me, I kind of think that's a positive. You know, I kind of think forcing people to do a little research and to do a little thinking about things like war and peace and liberty and food and water and shelter, I kind of think that's a positive. And when it comes to Christ, I think forcing people to think a bit, well, that's a real positive. So let's just leave it there. Enough about that. I'm not talking down to you. I'm talking up to you if you really, really think about it. You know? Oh, okay, the next one. It's a good one, kind of, maybe. I don't know. So, I work at Willy Wonka's. You all know I work at Willy Wonka's. You also know that Willy Wonka is just a name for something else. Like, it's not the actual name of the company. It's just the name I use because I frankly don't want to use the real name. Some of you may work there. You might report me to the secret police of Willy Wonka's. And frankly, right now, I've reached a relative homeostasis with this fucking contracting job. I won't lie to you and say I really, really, really love it, like every day's a dream and I'm living my dream. That would be a load of fucking bullshit. But I have reached a level of tolerance for Willy Wonka's and the work I have to do that I think is almost in harmonic balance with things that I need to do to fucking deal with it, and maybe even slightly better. So I can even imagine being so not stressed out at the end of the day that I don't have to come home and get drunk and listen to fucking Rush and AC/DC and fucking Frank Sinatra and vape weed. I might do things like compose music or learn to play better or go for a walk or, I don't know, maybe finish a couple novels that I started and I didn't finish. There are things I can do if I'm not so stressed out from a fucking job. So before I get into this topic, you need to know the job I have at Willy Wonka's right now, it's good enough for now. That's the nicest thing I can say. It's good enough for now. It pays the bills and I can tolerate it. And for Dan, in 2019, that's the American dream. To have a job that I can tolerate, that can buy me my Glimbus cubes and my Scrumuli and my whiskey and my beer and all of the bunkus and other things I have to shove down my gullet hole. So here's the topic. Here's the hairy butt. When you go onto Willy Wonka's campus, there is a lot of propaganda. A lot of propaganda. There is propaganda everywhere. There are posters that say things like, "Did you know that only 2% of programmers are Latino or black male? They're either Latino male or black male." Yeah, there's something wrong with that. And that's the quote. And listen, folks, if I went to a basketball game and it said that there is only 0.00000000 blah 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 percent ginger white folk who are fat, who are fucking playing professional basketball, despite the fact that I went to Willy Wonka's basketball camp in 1980. Listen, folks, I don't get hurt by that, okay? That there's not enough people like me playing professional basketball. It really doesn't hurt me. It doesn't bother me, okay? Why the fuck does it bother people that this is the case with software? Listen, folks, some people want to program computers, some people don't. If they don't, they don't. If they can't learn it, they can't learn it. And it's not about race. It's not about the color of your skin. If you think this is about race, you're an idiot. This is about dividing people. That poster was not about remedying a situation. It was about dividing people. So all across Willy Wonka's, you see these posters. And of course, one of the main themes is inclusion, okay? Which I think is great. You know, I frankly would just like to focus on work and go home. I would just assume solve problems and go home. I think the political, philosophical, social justice warrior bullshit at Willy Wonka's is a bit overdone. I'm getting emails now where people in their automatic sort of signature block have their preferred pronouns. What the fuck? And I can deal with that, and I can deal with the unisex bathrooms they're going to build because I intend on being a stinky weasel. And believe me, that's going to have some social justice implications. I can deal with all that crap, but all the fucking propaganda every fucking day. Every day. And you might say, Dan, what, you hate gay people? Listen, during Pride Month, there was Pride propaganda everywhere. In fact, it was basically telling people you should go to the Pride March as part of Willy Wonka's. And before I go too further on that, I don't hate gay people. I'm not technically homophobic because I don't fear them. Do I think that there's a gay lifestyle that I should respect? folks, I have given my speech on your sexual junk. Is it the case that people's sexual junk, either in their heads or on their bodies or both, point in all sorts of strange and kinky fucking directions? Yes, that's true. God is a mysterious motherfucker. I'm sorry, but I literally just told the truth. You think about Jesus, you think about Mary, God is a mysterious motherfucker. But the reality is this. Lots of people have lots of personal private theories about their own sexual proclivities, what they're attracted to, blah, blah, blah. And that's fine. I don't give a fuck. As long as you're not harming children or animals, as long as it's consenting adults, it's your own fucking business. But why the fuck would you try to build a culture around it? Why do you think there's a philosophy in your fucking junk? There isn't. Okay, there's no philosophy in your cereal, and there's no philosophy in your junk. And when you poop in your toilet, there's no philosophy there either. If I'm the first person to tell you that, I'm sorry, you're shocked, shocked, shocked to find gambling at Rick's. All across Willy Wonka, there are posters admonishing you to be inclusive. But you know what? Like that famous poem, where first they came for these guys and then they came for these guys, they never mention anarchists, although technically they came for the anarchists first. That's kind of fucking funny. Just like that, there is no inclusion for people who are anti-war at Microsoft, who are anarchists, who are pro-liberty, pro-non-aggression. There is no inclusion for Christians. And frankly, if I'm a Christian and I'm offended by much of what we call gay culture, there is definitely no inclusion for that. There is no inclusion for people who are offended by all this fucking propaganda at Willy Wonka's. And that might also be an important fucking point, too. So all you guys don't get shocked to find gambling at Rick's. I am making the best of this fucking job, and I'm happy to have it. But I won't lie, I am squirreling away money and silver and gold wherever I can, and I'm paying a little bit ahead on my rent. Because I'm also realistic. Best case scenario, this Willy Wonka job lasts 2 years. I'm not even... 2 years for me at this point might as well be 2,000 years. That is how unstable the future is at this point for me. Now, for you guys, you may think it's perfectly stable, and you're planning on your retirement, and when you grab that hang glider, you will end up on the island with Ray Kurzweil and the magical nanites, and you'll live forever. And if you end up on that fucking island, happy and good for fucking you. I don't think you're going to get there. And if you do end up there, I think Satan will have been there first. But, yeah, whatever. The future I see for me and my life, and for people like me, is only going to get more unstable. So if you tell me you might have 2 years, 2 years would be great. I'd be okay with that. But the reality is this. There's shit that happens at Willy Wonka's. There may be moments why I won't agree. Like, for example, mandatory vaccinations. I guarantee you in the next year or two, there'll be a Willy Wonka mandatory vaccination alert. It'll be for some type of fucking flu or fucking this or fucking that. And it won't matter that the Department of Defense jabbed me with 50 fucking needles going to and back from Korea, giving me 2 of the 3 anthrax shots. It really doesn't matter that I've already been pumped with a lot of shit. To keep my job now, I'll have to get pumped with more shit. Which, frankly, the science behind big pharma vaccinations is mostly bullshit. I'm not saying vaccinations are bullshit. I'm saying big pharma is mostly bullshit. Anyways. There could come a time where they're going to say, you get vaccinated or you go, and I will choose to go. There could come a time at Willy Wonka's, if I'm there a year from now, where they're going to have some mandatory policy where you have to prove you're inclusive, that you have to prove you support all the social justice warrior nonsense. I rebuke that. I reject that. I have free will. And that means I would also lose the job. And frankly, if the anti-Christian stuff gets worse than what it already is at places like Willy Wonka's, and it's getting worse all the time, I won't be at Willy Wonka's listening to a lot of anti-Christian bullshit. And certainly when it comes to freedom, That would be an issue for me. But here's one that I think is near on the horizon. If we get another 9/11 style false flag, and Willy Wonka's goes into rally around the flag mode and fucking shoving propaganda down our throats to blow up Iran or some other fucking country. If we go into that mode at Willy Wonka's, where I have that uncomfortable conversation like I did with someone I respected in September of 2001, when that person I respected asked me where my flag lapel was, and I told them, listen, I served in the military. I don't think I need to wear one. And at the time, it was more of, what the fuck do you think I need to prove? I stood on the line. I may not have been in combat, but I was certainly willing to go if it had happened when I was in. I was in Korea for a year. Shit is always happening there. It could have happened. The point is, that flag lapel conversation is going to be, it is going to seem prosaic and easy or whatever. It'll seem like nothing, stress-free, compared to the conversation I'll have at Willy Wonka's when people say, well, aren't you going to support the troops to go attack Iran? Don't you support them blowing them up? So you all know, whatever next aggressive war is going to come, I already do not support it. Do I support self-defense? Yes. Every living thing not only has a right, it has an obligation to defend itself unless it wants to be dead. So yes, self-defense is okay. And if someone attacks America and I have to defend myself, guess what, I will. But if you're asking me, do I believe in preemptive war? Do I believe we have a right to go around fucking blowing people up? No, that makes us a fucking bully. And bullies only last so long, folks. They only last so long. They really do. And their toadies will only be friends with them for so long. Eventually, bullies lose their toadies. And once they lose their toadies, they're out there at recess in the middle of the field alone. Out there in the play field. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but yeah, the propaganda at Willy Wonka's is pretty fucking thick. And I go there to work, folks. I don't go there to debate great philosophical bullshit. Although sometimes, listen, this is good news. There are some people on my team. They're pretty cool people, pretty smart people. And so sometimes I feel comfortable at lunch expressing my thoughts. And frankly, I'm trying to just focus on stuff that doesn't really matter because I think that's better long term. But yeah, I have a pretty cool team. But no, I can imagine a 9/11 style event in the near future where it's going to come down to, if you don't support the war, why are you here? You shouldn't be working here. You should be homeless. You should be dead. You should leave the country. If you don't support murdering people for no fucking reason, you shouldn't be working here. Folks, if it comes down to that bullshit, yeah, I also will not be at Willy Wonka's. That is why I pay ahead for my rent. I stash away cash. That is why I do it, folks. Because you may think the future is stable. I am sorry. I am so sorry. But you're staring at your phone too much. I don't know. It's 40 minutes almost on this podcast. I feel like I'm going to let it go here. Got kind of serious there. And, yeah. I hope you guys have a great rest of your Sunday. For the second time I said this on July the 21st, 2019. And if you're thinking about buying a French Bulldog, please do yourself a favor. Spend about a month researching French Bulldogs online. Please.